Here are the stories we're covering this week in the Category5.tv newsroom. We'll explain the latest threat, dubbed Meltdown and Spectre. Lithium-ion batteries in HP notebook computers and mobile workstations that are not customer replaceable are being recalled. We'll tell you which products are affected, so stick around. Remember the VTech hack we reported on back in 2015? The FTC has finally reached a settlement deal with the toy maker. And Toyota is working with a handful of companies to create an autonomous electric fleet of vehicles. These stories are coming right up. Don't go anywhere.
Whether you shop on ThinkGeek, GearBest, B&H Photo Video, eBay, or Amazon, or even if you want a free trial of Audible, you'll find the best deals and support the shows we produce by simply visiting the shopping sites you already frequent by using the links on our website. Visit category5.tv/partners for the full and ever-growing list and help us create more free content like this show. Thank you for shopping with our partners, and thank you for watching.
This is the Category5.tv newsroom, covering the week's top tech stories with a slight Linux bias.
I'm Sasha Rickman, and here are the top stories we're following this week. The latest threat has been dubbed Meltdown and Spectre, but what is it? Well, we gave it a week for the facts to start percolating, and here's the lowdown. Google's Project Zero revealed the details last week of a vulnerability impacting Intel chips going all the way back to 1995 and confirmed rumors that involved the use of speculative execution. They also went against comments made by AMD that said it was not affected. Google said these vulnerabilities affect many CPUs, including those from AMD, ARM, and Intel, as well as the devices and operating systems running them. The flaws, dubbed Meltdown and Spectre, allow an attacker to read memory that should not be accessible. This allows a virtual machine to read the memory of the host machine, thereby having access to other memory of other VMs hosted on that machine. Modern CPUs use speculative execution to increase performance. The concern, therefore, is that by patching against the exploit, performance will also suffer greatly. While the response to Meltdown and Spectre hasn't been as smooth as originally hoped, vendors appear to have done a thorough job. Meltdown, though easier to exploit, is also easier to protect against. Operating systems updates should appear successful and should do a solid job for Intel, Apple, and future ARM chips that are susceptible to the attack. Spectre, on the other hand, is going to be tricky. It doesn't have any clean, simple fix. Unlike the other attacks, there doesn't appear to be any way of implementing an operating system level fix. Appropriate application level fixes is in all likelihood going to require lots of manual effort by developers. Longer term, it seems likely that Meltdown will recede into the distance, an annoyance perhaps, but fully patched and protected against, while the rather more subtle Spectre is going to be with us for some time. The best thing we can do for now is update our systems to get the latest OS patches and watch it as the story continues to unfold. Wow. Well,
this is an interesting one.
Yeah, it absolutely is. Now, I wonder why Meltdown and Spectre. Like, how do they come up with these sorts of strange names?
Because it wouldn't be as fun to call them banana and chocolate.
Right.
It's the chocolate.
I don't know. Meltdown seems ominous. Spectre doesn't seem that bad to me.
Wait till you encounter it.
Yeah, that's true. Now, what I find so interesting is that there doesn't appear to be a way to fix. Sorry, was it Spectre that they can't fix? Without doing just software fixes, there's no way to get into the basics. It makes me wonder if this is going to open the door to some sort of a lawsuit that they've permanently made some computers and networks vulnerable, and as such, they're on the hook for the hardware to fix. Like, you know, this opens the door to that kind of stuff.
Where would it end, though?
This is
that is the big question.
Beginning. Yeah. This is the beginning of that story. No doubt there will be updates to follow. This is not
over. Yeah, and we'll see what kind of firmware patches come out. Right now it's still very speculative how much performance is going to be impacted by the fixes.
Yeah.
So I guess we'll just have to stand by and see.
Exactly. Now, lithium ion batteries in HP notebook computers and mobile workstations that are not customer replaceable are being recalled. The recall involves certain lithium ion batteries compatible with HP notebook computers and mobile workstations. The affected batteries were sold with the notebook computers and mobile workstations and were also sold separately as replacement batteries. Approximately 2,600 affected batteries were sold in Canada, 50,000 in the United States, and 1,900 in Mexico. The recalled batteries were sold over a two-year period from December 2015 to December 2017 at various retail locations and online. The problem is that the battery can overheat, posing a potential burn and fire hazard. The company has not received any reports of incidents or injuries in Canada. In the United States, the company has received 8 reports of overheating batteries and 1 report of injury. And in Mexico, the company has received 1 report of battery overheating and no reports of injury. This recall affects several models of HP Envy, Pavilion, ZBook, X360, ProBook, and more. So make sure you review the HP battery recall website to see if you're affected. The product name can be found by utilizing the keyboard shortcut Function and Escape or on the barcode label on the bottom of the notebook PC. Wow. So...
Now, would an overheating battery melt the computer potentially?
Sure, plastic computer, why not?
So it could set it on
and
fire.
And the battery chassis is usually plastic, right?
Yeah, that's right. True.
And it would set it on fire.
It could.
Which would be...
We've encountered that with Samsung's...
The phones, yeah.
Kerfuffle.
So yeah. There hasn't been a lot of injury. There's been a couple. Like, I mean, I'm not saying that the person injured isn't.
Sure.
But there's been
Well, usually if your laptop is on fire, you wouldn't lay down on top of it.
Right. So. But I wonder if it ever caught fire. I'm thinking injury, maybe it was overheating on somebody's lap and they just didn't
Right.
That's
it,
what I'm thinking.
Right?
And then they're going, wow, this is really hot.
Now, mm-hmm. I have had my laptop on my lap before. Now, I'm not saying
it's a good
place
that, for a laptop.
Yes.
Yeah.
Atop my lap, and it has gotten warm. So my battery is probably not a problem, right?
Mm-hmm.
But are there ways, because obviously you don't want things to overheat. It doesn't mm-hmm. help performance. Are there ways to circumvent that so mm-hmm. that you wouldn't have an overheating? Can you do something?
Well, in this
specific?
Case, it's a defect, right?
Right.
So, but generally speaking, your laptop, and if you look at your laptop, lift it up, look underneath, you'll see vents, mm-hmm. like vent holes, and that's where it draws air in from or blows air out of. Usually it comes in from the bottom and then out the side of the chassis.
Right.
So if you're sitting on like a blanket and you've got it on the bed or something like that and it's unable to draw air in,
right.
it can actually overheat. So that can cause damage to the internal component.
You can get little stands for underneath your laptop.
Yeah,
some
right.
of them come powered.
Like a bamboo stand.
Yeah, exactly.
Some of them have fans, yeah?
Yeah. So, I mean, there's ways around it just to allow some airflow.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Put it on a book, like a yeah. hardcover book, while you're.
Yep. Okay,
if
so
you
it's
don't
okay
have,
as long as it's on a hard surface. You're fine.
Well, I would think like instead of on the bed or mm-hmm. the blanket or whatever, something that's going to obstruct the airflow. If you had it on something hard, like a book or something, then that would help.
Oh, okay.
That's the poor man's little
yep.
holder
well,
case thing.
Awesome. Thank you. The U.S. Federal Trade Commission has agreed to a settlement deal with a children's electronic toy maker that it accused of collecting kids' personal information and failing to properly secure that data. The government watchdog said that VTech will pay $650,000 and agree to a set of privacy and security requirements in order to settle charges that it violated both the Children's Online Privacy Protection Act and the FTC Act. The settlement deal puts to bed allegations by the FTC that VTech broke the law with its operation of the following: Learning Lodge, Kid Connect, Planet VTech Games, and educational websites for kids. And specifically, the allegation that the company did not properly secure the information on millions of children and parents prior to the 2015 hack of its services and theft of customer data. The breached Learning Lodge and Kid Connect services were said to have hosted around 2.25 million accounts that contained information on roughly 3 million kids. The accounts had things like the child's name, date of birth, and the gender, as well as the parent's name, physical address, email address, and security question answers. The toy maker will be required to cut the FTC a $650,000 check, about 22 cents per affected child, to settle the case. VTech will also agree to a stricter set of compliance requirements, including regular third-party security audits to check whether it is properly storing and encrypting its collected information, and to make sure it is getting express consent from parents before it collects any personal information.
Speaking about data theft, eh?
Yeah.
Right. Wow. I don't know if that's harsh enough a punishment. 22 cents per affected child.
Well, who gets the money too, right?
Well. And like the occasional audit. How about you're done? Because you didn't do it right, and kids are now affected for the rest of their lives, maybe.
But VTech is kind of like the gold standard of, in the industry for these kind of products for kids.
Smart toys.
Yeah, I mean, I can't think of anybody else who does it more broadly than they would.
And
I mean,
openly.
Well, yeah. But it's funny that this has happened. I didn't know about the data breach in 2015, but we had, for our kids, LeapFrogs.
Right.
Okay.
And they were from VTech. And I remember, you know, you get the games, and then but then it asks you for these online accounts, and you can access other games from the accounts. And I remember saying to my wife, something seems wrong about this. Like, it's a kid's toy. Why should kids have to have accounts with all this information on it? And I called VTech, and I asked them about it. I'm like, why?
Really?
Yeah. And they said, oh, it's, you know, so that you as a parent can know what's going on in their account, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, why would you even add that kind of information? Yeah. Oh, it's, you know, it's just the way the system's set up.
Yeah.
And I had issues with it. So we never signed up. We ended up stop using the devices because there was something about it. I just had this hinky feeling.
You were right.
There we go. I'm vindicated.
There you go. Now, of course, if they are going to figure out a way of protecting future children, that's great. But what about the past children? Like, it bothers me that now they have the name, gender, birth date, physical address.
Yeah, and where is that data? Who has that data?
And security Santa question
Claus.
Answers. Like, I just worry about these children.
Billy, naughty.
These children now are growing up with one mark against them in the online world already, right? Mm. And how, I know.
Like, okay, I not saying data breaches and all this kind of stuff are okay, but the amount of information that parents put online about their kids already through Facebook, I can guarantee you your kid's life is categorized by Facebook.
Yeah.
They know their name.
Okay.
They know the toys that they play with. Like, the fact that Facebook has 52,000 categories of your information, like, it's not like your kids are not already tagged and numbered.
So what,
and
who's as still- a parent, because both of you are, so what, as parents, do you do to protect your kids against situations?
I have
like
a cabin
this?
In the woods.
Yes.
Bubble boy.
Yeah.
Think bubble boy.
I see.
What, I'm thinking about, go back to the picture point. How many of us still use a point and shoot or DSLR camera? We all use our phones to take pictures of the kids at the park and stuff.
Yes.
It's more convenient.
Yep.
Right. Our phones have geolocation tracking, and the EXIF data of the photos actually contain longitude and latitude for where that photo was taken.
Yes.
So then I upload that to social media before I strip all the EXIF data.
Mm-hmm.
Guess what? Facebook now knows exactly where I was sitting, longitude and latitude, when I took that picture.
Eek.
Yep. So, like, all this data is there. And,
okay.
And here, you know, digressing from VTech to now Facebook and everything else, but when data theft occurs, who gets that data? How do they aggregate it? What do they use it for?
Mm-hmm.
And these are children. We need to protect the children. And
so what do you do?
To a certain degree, when it comes to the online culture and the Internet of Things, you can only go so far when you have to trust that there's another company who's doing what's right.
Yeah, a lot of it is trust.
Yeah.
A lot of it's trust.
Huh.
So, but it's just, it's being smart. Don't get careless with that information.
Yeah, get to that point where you're like Jeff and say, something's a little fishy about this.
I was not in Russia today.
Just do a dual personality for each of your children. Your name is Jeff right now because we're in real life, but online your name is something else.
Samantha.
I don't know.
Do you have more for us?
Yeah, I certainly do.
Sweet.
Toyota has partnered with a number of companies to form the ePalette Alliance, which is a group intended to help guide its transformation as a mobility services company and to determine how it will make use of its new ePalette vehicle platform. ePalette is a modular driverless vehicle intended to suit a number of purposes all at once. The initial group of companies includes Uber, Didi, Mazda, Amazon, and Pizza Hut. They will be working together to help guide the direction of Toyota's concept vehicle, the ePalette, and how it develops and supports the mobility services it offers to companies as a result. Toyota discussed this as a way to help build a common platform that all businesses and companies can use as a plug-and-play open platform for building out their own mobility services, which they can then offer to consumers. For example, Amazon could use the vehicles for parcel deliveries and Pizza Hut could use them for pizza deliveries. The vision from Toyota is a vast one that would ultimately see its vehicles deployed as a fleet of flexible service vehicles that can switch from logistics to delivery to passenger travel as part of a large autonomous electric network. Toyota plans to launch the ePalette and the early results of its partnership with the Alliance at the Tokyo Olympics in 2021. So, here's the thing. With these vehicles, deliveries will have to change their definition because obviously a car cannot bring a pizza to your door.
Why not?
And Amazon cannot put
a package
to the step from the car. So now it's going to be in part, I think, part of the person, like the recipient of the delivery is going to now have to take a more active part in the situation. Like maybe meet the car at the road, or maybe it'll be like the Pizza Hut ice cream truck that drives down the road and then people just flag it to stop when you want a pepperoni pizza. I don't know. It's going to have to be different.
Yeah. And I think the technology is going to, we're going to see it evolve overnight. And we've seen this in, through the stories in San Francisco about the, you know, the small robots and things.
Yeah.
There's no need for a driver. So you don't need to build it like the, based on the old car model, right?
Right.
So if you could really do away with the driver's seat, then why not? Why not have it something that shows up and uses NFC to detect when you approach it to take the pizza, and then it charges your card and done and done.
Seems all right to me.
Yeah.
So, maybe I'm just thinking about the people factor. This is going to wipe out an entire industry of jobs.
But somebody has to put that pizza in the car.
No, they don't.
Not necessarily.
Conveyors.
Yeah.
Robots.
Like,
who needs to even make the pizza anymore?
Oh, I mean, now there won't be any cross-contamination
everywhere,
because that's human error.
College students everywhere are not going to have school money anymore. Like, how many college students do deliveries for pizza and stuff just to make a couple extra bucks?
So they need to learn how to fix autonomous cars. We're doing a full circle now. It's all trade.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, there's going to be a lot. I mean, I love the advancement we make in technology, but there's also the people factor of it. And the other thing I can't help but wonder is what happens when something goes wrong? You order pizza, but instead, nope, you just got that $10,000 Fossil watch that somebody else ordered because the machine screwed up. Where's the liability on that?
I don't know. There's not people involved, so I don't think there'll be mistakes.
I'm not too sure about that.
Come on now.
We're gonna have to
searching for examples. I want to search for examples.
I don't think that it will be one vehicle that does Amazon deliveries and pizza deliveries.
But that's what you just
no.
Said.
It will be a fleet of vehicles that changes roles. But I don't think it goes
so
out.
So it
on
must
one
have
run.
Passenger seats.
Right. It wouldn't go on run one run and be an Uber driver and a Pizza Hut delivery place, and like it's got to be like just interchangeable. Today you're the pizza car. And then tomorrow you're the Uber car with the pizza smell in it. And then all of a sudden those people are going to crave pizza. See?
Again, full circle. Nice.
Yeah.
We'll see how it comes about. But
it's interesting, though.
Yeah, it's very cool. And we're seeing a lot of the stuff at CES this week and seeing like all the different manufacturers that are doing autonomous vehicle stuff. And it's really tough and yet exciting to sit down, and I want to do this and I can't do this on the air, but to sit down and kind of think of predictions of how the technology could be used and how it could work.
Right.
Because really it comes down to changing the paradigm. You mentioned about jobs and things. Mm-hmm. Well, when the horse-drawn carriage became a thing of the past and the automobile took over,
people panicked.
A lot of people lost jobs, but new jobs were created.
And the horse population dropped.
But you know what I mean? We can't predict how the creation of the automobile is going to change the industry, let alone the world.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you look at what we've accomplished as a society in the last 120 years, and you kind of go, where are we going to be in 50 years because of how quickly it's picking up?
Yeah.
And you can't predict these kind of things. You can speculate all you want, but you just kind of have to see it play out, and you do the best you can to hope that it doesn't go awry, you know, and end up with some sort of AI that takes over the world because we're actually screwing it up. I'm pretty sure that was a movie plot.
Mm.
I'm pretty optimistic, I'll tell you.
You are optimistic.
It's going to go very well.
It's sick.
Big thanks to Roy W. Nash and our community of viewers for submitting stories to us this week. Thanks for watching the Category5.tv newsroom. Don't forget to like and subscribe for all your tech news with a slight Linux bias. And for more free content, be sure to check out our website. From the Category5.tv newsroom, I'm Sasha Rickman.